other can rediscover.
Welcome to the Rediscover Hour on Relevant Radio, a time to explore our Catholic faith and find out about ways to share the faith with others. Help create the possibility of an encounter with the person of Jesus Christ in the lives of others by living out the call to the new evangelization and helping fellow Catholics rediscover full life in the Church. The Rediscover Hour starts now.
And welcome to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins, and so glad that you could join us today. You know, one of the beautiful things about radio is that there you are. You're on 494, you're on 35W or 394, and you got issues on your mind. You're thinking about things. We just went through the holidays. We had a Christmas, and I hope you had a good Christmas. Went through the New Year's, and I hope that your New Year's resolution, if you're one of those that makes those kinds of resolutions, worked for you. If you're like most people, you probably trailed off a little bit, but it is a good time to start anew. And I remember, you know, one of our earlier shows with Father Duffner talking about new beginnings, and I hope that you had an opportunity to start some new habits, going to confession and frequenting the sacraments, and maybe a Bible reading, reading the catechism. But I know also that this time of the year, particularly with the weather here in Minnesota, can be a little bit gray. And sometimes that affects the way, you know, we live. It affects the way we think. And today on the Rediscover Hour, we have a couple of very special guests coming up that I think you're going to really want to stay with us here. We're going to be talking to Father Rolf Tollefson from St. Hubert's in Chanhassen, who is just a great, great priest and a great counselor. We also have, speaking of counseling, licensed psychologist Paul Ruff. And he's working at the seminary and is also in private practice. And we're going to be talking to both of them about some of the issues that we face this time of year. I'm thinking of depression. I'm thinking of anxiety. I'm thinking about some marital problems, maybe even anger issues. But we're going to have an hour of talking about some of the problems that maybe you've been facing, or family members. And I just want to tell you right off the top of the show here, we're not going to solve all the problems in the world. Close, but not all of them. And as we're going to be talking to two experts, also want you to know that we're also not opening up the shingle for private practice either. But we do want to talk about some of the issues that you may be facing. So give your friends a call. If you know of somebody that needs to hear from two very, very holy and well-trained men when it comes to problems this time of the year, you might want to give them a call right now and tell them to tune in to Relevant Radio. So are you ready to talk? You ready to kind of open your heart? You're all alone in the car right now listening, so this might be the time. You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. We'll be back in just a moment.
Oh my gosh, look at this family room. It is incredible. Who did the work?
I was listening to Relevant Radio and heard an ad for Becker Building and Remodeling, and they did the job, and we love it.
Didn't you tell me you bought your car after hearing an ad on Relevant Radio?
I did. I listen all the time.
Hey, great party, great grill. Man, you must have paid a lot here.
Nope, heard about it on Relevant Radio and bought it yesterday.
And this backyard living space. Wow, let me guess.
That's right, Relevant Radio. I heard about American Landscape and they made it happen.
Does your business have the sound? If it does, people are coming in and buying your products and telling others about you. Branding, building awareness, and driving traffic. Let the professionally trained Relevant Radio marketing consultants help you give your business the sound. Send an email to businessbuilding@relevantradio.com. Businessbuilding@relevantradio.com. We'll take it from there. Sound good?
I felt forgiveness in the deep recesses of my soul. I was so empty, and now I'm full.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. Forgiveness, isn't that a beautiful song? Talking about forgiveness. I know that forgiveness is the key to so many of our troubles. Letting go of the pain, letting go of those times where people said something about us, or they wrote something about us, or even gave us a look, and something happened in our heart, and it started to take root and grow, and maybe the other person doesn't even know about it. But maybe it ended up in depression. Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. I'm Jeff Cavins, and this hour we're going to be talking about issues of the heart. We're going to be talking about depression, anxiety, things that you might be going through. And you know, when you talk about these things and you bring the topic up, oftentimes people say, you know, I'd just like to hear from somebody who knows what they're doing here. And we have two guests with us today on the Rediscover Hour who do. I'd like to introduce you to a good friend of mine, and many of you have heard him in the past, Father Rolf Tollefson. He is the pastor of St. Hubert's Catholic Church in Chanhassen. Father Rolf, welcome.
Thank you,
to the
Jeff.
Show. It's good to have you. Thanks. And we also have a licensed psychologist with us. Many of you have heard of him. He is a local guy, and he's teaching at the seminary, Paul Ruff.
Thank you. Good to be with you today.
It's good to be with both of you. And I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to spend time with brothers and sisters riding around in the Twin Cities right now. Maybe they're at home. Maybe they're in a nursing home. We don't know. But we want to talk about some of these issues at this time of year. And when we're talking about January, in the middle of January, and the sky is gray, a lot of people do struggle, don't they? There's issues this time of year that might come up at no other time. Is that true, Paul?
Yes. I mean, one of the issues, especially for us Minnesotans, is with this weather and with the darkness that we encounter throughout the winter, all of us have a tendency towards some depressiveness. And in a sense, that's a biological mechanism for survival. It conserves calories. We start to shut down. However, it affects our mood in pretty profound ways, and in some people more than others. And we call that seasonal affect disorder, or very appropriately, SAD. And the mechanism behind that is we have reduced light coming in through our eyes. Our melatonin levels go up. And melatonin is the neurotransmitter that tells us, let's just take a nap now. Let's just shut down. We have no energy. We want to just hibernate for a while. Also, our serotonin levels, and serotonin is one of the activating neurotransmitters that keeps things flowing well in our brain, starts to go down. So melatonin up, serotonin down. And the other thing we've found in the last decade, more so with research, is vitamin D levels down. We really depend on sunlight as a major source for vitamin D. So people who are experiencing just lethargy, inability to focus on their daily activities, lack of interest in things that would usually interest them, that can include more appetite or less appetite than usual significantly, need for more sleep or difficulty with sleeping, desire to withdraw from relationships, a lack of any sense of joy. All of those things together form what we call the depressive symptoms. And if those are going on for more than a couple of weeks, we all have those troughs where we are in those. But if they go on for more than a couple of weeks for us in a depressed, sort of sad mood, it'd be a good time to be consulting, first of all, with the physician. Mm-hmm. When people come to me with depression, especially this time of year, I say, please get a physical, first of all. Check your thyroid, check your vitamin D levels, and then let's come in and talk about some ways that you can cope and deal with what you're going through.
Right.
But I think it's really important that people, we have such a strong Northern European, let's bootstrap ourselves through things culture here. And I think it's really important that we accept our vulnerability as human beings and as God's creatures who are susceptible to these changes in nature that we're trying to work our way through. And that we really avail ourselves, let people know what we're going through, let people speak to us, because often people can be hesitant to tell us what they're seeing. Mm-hmm. Ask those around you if they notice that you're a bit off of your usual game.
Would you say, though, as a psychologist, that you see this more in the winter in Minnesota?
Definitely more in the winter.
How about you, Father? With Father Rolf Tollefson from St. Hubert's is joining us also. As a priest, obviously, when you're dealing with the real pains of the heart and you're dealing with discouragement in people's lives, some of this is brought into the confessional, and we can't obviously talk about that. But is this something that you also see as a priest, people coming and saying, Father, I don't know what's happened, but life has changed for me?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks, Jeff. There's two things that I really would work on with someone who's dealing with depression, and one of them is to encourage them to have a life of contemplation and prayer, because a lot of times when you're having these depressive thoughts, you're really ruminating upon a negative thought or a lie about yourself. And that's what really can help you to bring you down into the pits of despair. But contemplation heals, as Father Thomas Dubé said in one of his books. And contemplation means that we shift our focus away from the things of the world and instead begin to think more about God and to receive the gifts that God wants to give us. When I do some healing prayer with people who may have depression, part of what brings about the great healing is when God provides an image that fits exactly the wound that they may have been suffering with in the past. And that image or that thought, feeling, desire that they receive is tailor-made to fit that wound or that lie that they've received in the past that may be causing that depression. The second thing that I try to get them to do is what St. Ignatius of Loyola called discernment of spirits. Discernment of spirits is utterly critical because a lot of people think that the voice that they hear being spoken within them all the time, this voice of desolation or sadness or discouragement, this voice that speaks lies like you're no good, you need to withdraw from other people. A lot of people think that that voice is the voice of God when in fact it's not. It mm-hmm. just feels so strong in them that it feels like God, but it's the voice of either their fallen humanity or of the enemy speaking within them. So I try to focus in on having people pray contemplative prayer as much as is possible when you're depressed and to be able to also discern the spirits.
Is there a way that somebody can sort of assess where this problem might be coming from, whether it's discouragement or this sadness, this depression? Is there a way that they can kind of ask themselves some questions as to, is this the time of the year? Or, and I want to get the basic categories of this, is there sin? Is there a physical problem? Is there a hormonal problem? Or is it a great tragedy that's taken place in my life? What are the big categories that bring on incredible sadness in people's lives that can lead to a serious depression?
I appreciate that question, Jeff. I guess one of the recommendations I would have is to do maybe a simple inventory of life experiences that you've had. Like, when was the period, the time in your life in which you felt the most discouraged in the past when you were, you know, maybe 3 to 7 years old or something? Or when was the time in which you, what was your self-concept that you thought of yourself when you were in that same period? And you can do this for many, many different years, as much paper as you have, according to your life, to spell out, well, what have been the life events that happened? Sometimes what's happening, the pain that we feel in the present is simply an echo of a childhood pain that we experienced in the past. Not all the time, mm-hmm. but sometimes that can be the case because of the brain works by association. So, you know, we see out of the corner of our eye and like a stick or something like that, but then we kind of get triggered and we go back to that memory when we were 3 years old and we thought it was a snake and when we were three, but in fact it's actually just a stick now. So we have mm-hmm. that association. So we feel that way, the pain of the past coming up into the present again.
Mm-hmm. And Paul?
Yes, to build a little bit on what Reverend Tolleson is saying, I think that's very important work for people to do. A caution I would give alongside that would be, in a depressed state, depression looks for a reason, and the reason may actually be colored by the depression. So if I'm depressed, I might look at my marriage and what's getting me down about it, but I'm actually looking at it through lenses that are already depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not going to be very good at doing self-assessment at that point. So I think a really important thing for people is to use the people around them mm-hmm. to talk about what's happening, explore it, but also to get some professional help, which could come from a physician, a priest or minister, a psychologist, or all three, to kind of take a look at this from the different angles. And one way I think about depression is it is a cyclical thing. The more I'm depressed, the more disconnected I become, the worse I do, the darker my life looks, mm-hmm. the more I become depressed. Mm-hmm. The less exercise I get, the more I might eat carbohydrates, the more I withdraw. So it starts to feed on itself mm-hmm. in a cyclical way. So I think to get outside of the self is really, really crucial for people. So as much as I would really be right on board with including a contemplation as part of the picture, people could confuse that at times with sort of an unhealthy introspection. which can look for all of the pains in my life, which will pop up right to in front of me in my depressed state. And I'll lose track of all the many blessings. Gratitude is another route out of depression. And this is why, actually, I remember hearing some time ago that the Japanese used to use this as the main cure for what they didn't call depression, but a similar state, which is to list all of the things that are positive in my life.
Sure.
What are the blessings I can take account of and be grateful for? And not so I put rose-colored glasses on, but where I get a realistic perspective, because depression leads to depressed thinking, which leads to depression.
And that gets into one of the things that that I imagine is part of the solution or getting yourself out of this. I mean, clearly, God did not create us to live that way. I mean, the joy of the Lord is our strength. And I wrote a book not too long ago on praise and thanksgiving. And one of the things I noted in there, Paul and Father, is that when you begin to praise God and begin to thank God, something does change in your own life. And when you praise God and you thank God, even in the midst of your discouragement, like David being caught, you know, between enemies, or his own friend Saul wants to kill him and it's brought him down, he feels discouraged about this. He begins to praise God, and praising God doesn't change God because he's the same yesterday, today, and forever, but it changes your perspective. It kind of gives a new lens to it rather than that depressive lens and that lens of giving up completely, and it gives you a new lens. Is praise and thanksgiving and being grateful something that you actually prescribe to patients?
It is something I prescribe to patients, and it's actually one of the areas, along with forgiveness, that spirituality and religion and psychology have the most research or body of knowledge that really dovetail with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who practice what's called positive psychology, gratitude practices, would be one of the great suggestions they've made, and really see research outcomes where that makes a difference, as does working on forgiveness of past injuries and wounds, where we let go of those burdens, mm-hmm. or an unrealistically negative perspective. And it really creates changes in the brain over time.
I want to talk about forgiveness and continue on with praise and thanksgiving. Father, if you have anything to say about praise and thanksgiving. But when it comes to getting out of the hole, so to speak, there is the physical aspect. And sometimes people might have to have some medication to get them out of that. Let's talk about that for a moment, because when I was growing up, And Paul, I would venture to say you too, mm-hmm. mental, quote-unquote, illness or problems with how you're feeling were sort of taboo. I mean, people didn't want to talk about it. It was like, okay, I've got a broken leg, big deal, but I've got a broken heart? That isn't something, or a broken mind? That's not something that people wanted to talk about. Is that changing these days, that stigma?
I see a great deal of change in that. It used to be that, especially for men, I think there is more permission to have those problems, which we've always had. My own father was hospitalized for depression when I was a young child, and I remember going through a depressive time myself in college, and I was telling him about it, and he told me about his hospitalization for about a week. And I was so grateful. I said, I feel so much better already to know that my dad was depressed too. So I think to know that we are all, this is not about a weakness of character or a lack of our masculinity. It really can very much be about a set of genes and a physiological response that any of us can have under stress. So I do see that changing. I get a lot more male clients who come in readily. It used to be men were mainly referred by their wives.
Mm-hmm.
I've had many more men seeking help, and very fine men seeking help with this. Over the last 10 years in particular, I see a real change in that. So I'm really moved by that. And that we as men get to have our own vulnerability, I think really is part of our power in the end, that we get to embrace this part of us and our need for assistance from each other, from God, from our physicians, our priests. So you know, I see a real sea change in that.
Well, I want to talk about the forgiveness aspect of it, because I know that I used to be a pastor, and I met with an awful lot of people, and I found that unforgiveness was actually part of the problem. There had been a wound or a hurt when they were a child, teenager, first marriage, whatever it might have been, and there is that heart wound. And And they haven't been able to get over that, and forgiveness is a part of it. Reminds me of a quote that I was just reading the other day from Saint Therese, when she said something, I'm paraphrasing here, she said, "When I can no longer stand on my own power, or the suffering is too great, I hide myself within your wounds, O Jesus." And what I'm seeing a lot is that people are saying, "I'm hiding within my own wounds, O Jesus." And what he's asking us to do is to look at his wounds and what he did for us. And forgiveness is a part of that. So let's talk about that for a few minutes. The role of forgiveness when it comes to being hurt, and that hurt has led to great discouragement and almost a giving up.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Happy to talk about that, Jeff. And, if I'm hearing confessions or something, won't give any names here, but if I'm hearing that there is some kind of element of unforgiveness, what I will oftentimes prescribe as a penance is kind of a litany of forgiveness. And mm-hmm. what that means is that I want the person to be able to renounce any kind of unforgiveness that might be in their heart towards specific people for doing specific things, because that's where the resentment lies, is in those specific things. So I'll say, please repeat after me, in the name of Jesus Christ, in the name of Jesus Christ, I forgive. You put the person's name in there for what they did. Okay, now go back again and do the next thing. Because there is a very important human cooperation, which is to give permission to Jesus, but Jesus is the one who actually works the hardest to be able to heal any kind of resentment or unforgiveness that's within them. Also, what we run into as well with forgiveness is we run into, obviously, a lot of anger, because anger is the power emotion that counters weakness. And I'm just so pleased that Paul has mentioned so many things today about the importance of vulnerability. If we don't have vulnerability in a spiritual life, we can't get anywhere, because we've got all these barbed wire fences surrounding the womb, mm-hmm. And the wound, and no one will penetrate those. In fact, that's what the anger is detected as by other people. It's like, ouch, well, I didn't really want to say that to that person, I guess. What am I hitting there, you know? Because that anger is that protection, in quotes, that protects someone from going to that place of vulnerability. But once we get to that place of vulnerability, and it can be definitely a forgiveness issue, that's when Christ has permission then, if the person wants to go to that place, to be able to relieve them of that burden of unforgiveness.
So when we're talking about vulnerability, it reminds me of humility. Mm-hmm. And that in getting better, what role does humility have in getting better? Paul?
I want to stay with vulnerability for just a moment longer. Because I think it's a really important piece. In relating to forgiveness, a difficulty I see that many have, and maybe men more than women with forgiveness, is we don't quite want to acknowledge that we got hurt.
Yeah.
And until we acknowledge we're hurt and actually have the righteous anger about a hurt that was inflicted, we really can't do the work of forgiveness. Mm-hmm. So sometimes men will say, yeah, my dad was pretty physically rough with me, but I deserved it. Or it didn't really affect me. Mm-hmm. And it is a vulnerable thing to say, boy, that really hurt me as a young person. Can I come alongside that young part of me that got hurt, have legitimate empathy for the hurt there, have the anger at the injustice, not the judgment against my father, but the anger at the injustice of a mistreatment. And then I can start to do the work of forgiveness. And I think humility is a kind of a vulnerable place to stand. Mm-hmm. I am a limited creature who can get hurt. That's part of my vulnerability and my humility. I need others, and I depend on the care of others, mm-hmm. Which leads me then to gratitude, if I can be humble, that I've really been given a great deal. Helps me focus on that, not just on the hurts that I have. But I think that humility of I'm a limited creature, I mean, standing in that space, and that I need God to heal me in the end as well, is very important. One thing I encourage people, and I would appreciate your feedback on this too, Father Rolf, when they come to me for therapy, even if I wasn't a believer, prayer has been shown to be a very powerful agent in healing, mm-hmm. even in the psychological research. It's not explained by psychology, but it's found to be a powerful agent of healing. And I always ask people, what do you pray for? And people often are praying for healing or for rescue from a situation.
Sure.
And I think a humble place we can stand in our situation, because often we're being given all of these situations, including our depression, as a way to deepen something and learn something in our walk with God, is to say, I encourage them, could you think of praying for being aware of God, how God's already trying to heal you, more than begging for that, as if he's not trying that already.
You're right.
This came to me when I was praying for healing for one of my children, and I heard God, one of the few times I've kind of had that sense of an internal voice say, "What do you think I'm doing? She's my daughter first."
Right.
and so
he wants her healed even more than you want
her
healed.
Yes, right. So it struck me, he wants the same for me. So times when I've been down, one thing I try to do to maintain some humility is say, "Please allow me, help me allow you to be with me right while I'm in this."
Right.
Help me be aware of your presence as I suffer in this, whatever it might be. Help me to learn whatever you want me to learn in this. And I think that's a humble place to stand. It's not a protest against what's happening. And I'm not suggesting that instead of getting medication, which
sure.
is very, very necessary in a lot of cases for a chronic depression.
And that's something that's something we need to emphasize as we talk about this, is there isn't a silver bullet, is
no,
there?
No, I think we really want to work on these things from all the angles. We are, as Catholics, in our Catholic anthropology, we are bodies,
yes.
we are spirits, we are minds. These are a unitary expression of our personhood, and we need to be really treating all of them. And I think at times we can either over-physicalize or over-spiritualize and miss that these other dimensions are really rich and important part of our creaturehood.
And isn't it true, and we have to take a break here in a moment, but isn't it true that we don't see ourselves the way others see us oftentimes? You know, we've all been recorded on our tape recorders and we played it back. And what was the thing you said after you heard it?
Mm-hmm.
"That isn't me."
Mm-hmm.
No, that's not me. Because you hear yourself a certain way and everybody else, they hear you a certain way. You see a picture of yourself from the side and you say, that's the way I look? Yeah, that's the way everybody sees you, but it's not the way you see yourself. And when it comes to wounds and the way we respond to the wounds in our life, the way we sometimes act out or we close up, is everybody else sees it, and they might be able to really help you there. We're talking with Father Rolf Tollefson, who's the pastor at St. Hubert's in Chanhassen, and also Paul Ruff, a clinical psychologist. We're talking about this time of year, discouragement. We're talking about the blues and how to get through them. And I hope you stick with us. On the other side of this break, I'd like to talk a little bit about forgiveness, because we've mentioned forgiveness, but let's get into the DNA of it. What does it mean to forgive? Because when I say to you, you need to forgive your father, well, that might mean something to you that isn't going to bring about any kind of good result. So what is biblical forgiveness, and how do we actually do it? You're listening to the Rediscover Hour. We'll be right back.
Rediscover. The Inner Life on Relevant Radio.
One of the intentions from the Holy Father, the value of silence. He says that people today, often overwhelmed by noise, they rediscover the value of silence and listen to the voice of God and their brothers and sisters.
Exactly. Just being quiet, resting in the Lord. It reminds me again of something I think C.S. Lewis in his writings might be Screwtape Letters. Screwtape, the devil, is saying that the thing that the demons love is noise. They need noise. And then on another occasion, I think it was Lewis who said, in heaven, that which is not song is silence. And silence is just a beautiful tranquility by which we can recollect ourselves and be recollected and just simply be still, as it says in the Psalms, and know that I am God.
Rock solid Catholic spiritual direction. The Inner Life with Chuck Neff. Weekdays 11 Central, 12 Eastern on Relevant Radio.
Song that's never old. Oh, I need a story never told.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. So glad you could join us today. You know, life is going by left and right, cars all over the place, and there you are dealing with the issues in your own life. We're talking about discouragement and getting over depression at this time of the year. We're talking with Father Rolf Tollefson, and we're also talking with Paul Ruff, a clinical psychologist, a licensed psychologist, and we've been talking about, you know, some of the issues that bring on the sadness at this time of the year with some people, Paul Ruff said that everybody to some degree experiences this in the winter in Minnesota. It could be an issue of vitamin D. It could be an issue of melatonin. It could be an issue of not enough light in our lives. But you know, it can also be an injury. It could be a relationship and unforgiveness. And we're investigating this from all angles. And if you're going through this in your life, you know what? You are not abnormal. You are a human being. And we're very vulnerable to injury in our lives, both physically and emotionally. But the question is, what are we going to do about it? And what is available to us? And you know what? As a Catholic, you've got so many wonderful things available to you. You've got the sacraments, the teachings of the church. You've got Jesus Christ, the Holy Spirit. You have the Blessed Mother. And that's not to say you don't have problems, but it is to say you do have a lot that you can use in your life to get through this. And also, there's nothing wrong with needing medication in your life if it's something that's physical. The point is, let's get better. Let's get better so we can serve God. And don't look at life as, you know, this is, I just put up with this, but I want to get back to real life. You know what? For you right now, this is real life. It is real life. And you can deal with it. So I want to thank both of you for joining us. Before the break, we were mentioning this issue of forgiveness. And I know that so often it's easy to say, well, you know what, Peggy? You know what, John? You know what, Susan and Larry? You just need to forgive. And everybody says, yeah, I do. But they might have in their mind what that means, and what that means might not set them free. Is that true, Paul?
I think that's very true. I think as Christians, we've always espoused forgiveness, but I don't think we've been very good at articulating how to do it. I think as psychologists, we've been kind of late in coming to the table in terms of the need for forgiveness if we're really going to close even psychological wounds. Even for people who don't have a particular faith life, I find it to be a very true thing. There's been some very good research. Rick Fitzgibbons and Enright, whose first name I'm forgetting, Bob Enright, did a long research project at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on forgiveness, and Luskin out of Stanford, I believe. A couple of books, if people wanted to look for them, Forgive for Good is one by Luskin, Luskin. Enright, Enright, Forgiveness is a Choice is a very, very good book. And probably of the two, the more Christian-informed, possibly, though it's not being expressly that in its intent. Some of the steps to forgiveness, we often say, I've forgiven.
Mm-hmm.
And we've, I think, expressed when we say that a wish to have forgiven.
Yeah.
And an intent. Though if we've forgiven before we know how we were injured, we haven't really forgiven. And often people want to jump to forgiveness as another way of saying it didn't really hurt me that much or it was okay.
Let's get through it.
Skip over this and not deal with the messiness. And I think forgiveness can be a very long-term process for people. It takes as long as it does. It does start with a decision to forgive. And then I need to really tell the story of my injury. Often we go around telling these grievance stories over and over again to people that show our unforgiveness. But to tell to somebody who's going to help us be a partner in forgiveness what the story was, how we got hurt,
mm-hmm.
in telling another human being and seeing their response to us, we can be more fully informed about what really happened to me, how I was affected in this, and bring it back into the human community. Often a feeling that's left out, any of our emotions could be left out. Anger is often too left out by people in terms of the right I have to protect myself and to object to being hurt. But also the hurt and vulnerability is one often left out. So owning my hurt, owning my anger, owning my sadness. So first we're kind of immersing ourselves in that injury. But that's not where we stop if we're going to forgive. We then move to taking some perspective. Can I see the person who hurt me as a full human being? I had a woman in a education forum that I was doing once on fathers. and she was a parole officer, and she had had an abusive father. And she said at one point, I was going through old court records for part of my research, and I came across some statements by my father as a juvenile delinquent in court. And she said, he's exactly the kind of guy I love to work with.
Oh.
And I could immediately forgive him at that point.
Sure.
So,
well, she saw him as a human.
She saw him as a human. So to see our parents not as demigods or those who hurt us as all-powerful, but failed human beings who were acting out probably some of their own hurt.
There's something, though, about being a kid. And, you know, my dad can beat up your dad, and your dad is just superhuman, and we think they should be perfect as kids, don't
we? Yeah, we really assign that. And that's probably, many of us went through that even with the holidays recently. Our family should be better than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, hey, you're part of it,
mm-hmm.
and you can work on your peace.
Isn't it something that you, going back to that, Paul, when during the holidays, we get together with family and we suddenly faced with the realization that we're kind of messed up in some ways.
Yes.
You know, we've got issues and we've got problems. And on top of that, I drove 600 miles to figure it out for the 18th year. And I think that's something that you're saying is very true.
Yes, and I think part of forgiveness is it allows us to change our expectations.
Good point.
Often we keep going back into situations saying, maybe this time it'll be different. Instead of, no, people are as injured as they are. They can change, but I don't get to presume they should change according to my plan.
Right.
And how do I go even into a holiday situation, especially after I've gone through some forgiveness, and say, these are limited people, I'm a limited person, what is it, what's the occasion that we can do together that honors something that's of value between us?
Well, let's go deeper with that issue of forgiveness then, continuing on with that. I want to look kind of at the DNA of forgiveness.
Right. So along with that perspective taking where we can start to see this person who hurt us more humanly, it starts to loosen this sense of their awfulness and broadens the human story. Mm-hmm. It includes the difficulties we all have. We can start to see our own pain alongside theirs. Imagine how we've hurt others as we take perspective. As we tell that story, start to heal in that story, start to feel the feelings in legitimate ways. Then we can really begin to open up ourselves for forgiveness. And I think for people who have a spiritual life, and for us Catholics in particular, we certainly have that with Christ. Ask Christ to enter into those wounds, as you said beautifully before, to enter into his wounds as a way to take perspective, to see us as part of this broader, bigger story that we have as Christians. But to really allow God's healing to enter at that point, and to really have a felt experience of how does God want to take this from me? Am I willing to surrender this now that I've known the story, I've told it, have felt the feelings, I've been able to take some perspective? And then as I start to feel my own healing, can I carry that wish forward for the person who hurt me? One of the beautiful things in Enright's work is he says at the end of the forgiveness process, you give a gift to the person
that hurt you.
And that gift may be a tangible gift, it may be a spiritual gift, but that you really are wishing for them a deep healing. And that's in a number of the healing methodologies for forgiveness, that we carry a good wish, a good intent, wishing every good thing for the person who hurt us, praying for them all the healing that we're wanting for ourselves, and starting to include ourselves alongside of them in the human family again. I think the first beneficiary of forgiveness is the forgiver. Often we should not go to the person who hurt us and say, I forgive you, because what they're really going to hear is, I blame you.
Yeah, I blame you again. Especially I want to remind you.
Yes, I want to remind you how you hurt me. At times,
but I've risen above it.
At times it's appropriate to work that out. And reconciliation is another thing, and I don't mean the sacrament, but reconciling in a relationship is not always advisable. Forgiving is always advisable. Forgiving I do for me, it frees me up, it helps me be back in touch with my role as a son of God alongside other people's roles as children of God. Reconciliation depends on the other person being able to really responsibly work out a healthy relationship. That's not always a possibility with people.
Let's reiterate that point. I think it's a very important point because it comes up all the time where people want to go to the person and say, you hurt me, and I'm going to forgive you. And like you said, Paul, it's sort of puffing yourself up in some ways of, I want you to know you did a bad, but I want you to know I've risen above it, and I'm okay now, and I want you to know that. It's sort of like checkmate, you know? Mm-hmm. But when do you go to a person and say, I have been hurt? You don't have to tell them I went into a depression over this or anything, but how do you go to a person and say, I've really been hurt in this situation? And is it always prudent to do that?
Well, I guess my answer would always be just to go back to the vulnerability again, that if there is a vulnerability, I think that's a good way to approach them. I'm sure that Paul would have his own perspective on when and where to do that. But in terms of the stance of how to approach someone that you're just really not happy with is to be able to just be humble and vulnerable and say, I may not have my act together here, or here's something I've done to offend you in the past, but I want you to know that I don't have my act together as well. So that might be an approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay, when we look at forgiveness from a biblical perspective, oftentimes we hear the word release. In that famous Matthew story where the man was forgiven so much, he owed so much, he owed lifetimes of money, and then he left the Lord, went out and found someone who owed him relatively a small amount, grabbed him by the throat and said, you know, pay back what you owe, and somebody watched it. And went back and told the owner and said, you know, that guy you just forgave bazillions of dollars, he just threw a guy in jail for $50. And he came back and he said, you wicked servant. He said, I released you. Couldn't you have released them? That word release is really important in forgiveness. And so often we hear people say, I'll forgive, but I won't forget. Is forgiving forgetting?
I think it's really important that it's not. I think there's a part of our forgiveness process that's forgetting the resentment. It's letting go of the resentment. Mm-hmm. But I think we get to stay informed by our experience of each other. But it's not equating the person any longer with the particular injury they did.
Is that
to
the
me.
Releasing?
That's the releasing. And I think the first person who gets released by forgiveness is the forgiver. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really very biblical, you know, judge not lest you be judged. And the same part of us that judges others mm-hmm. internally is judging us all the time. We carry a little judge around inside of us that wants to kind of have dominion. And I think it's important we not let him be in charge.
That idea of releasing reminds me, Paul, of something I've heard many times and read in books. And I want to see what you think about it. And that is that if I'm bound to an alcoholic father,
right,
and that has become the focus of my life, my anger, I won't marry a guy like that. And then 10 years down the road, they marry an alcoholic. Right. Is there a relationship between how you have bound someone and what continues on in your life?
And how we explain that exactly, I think we could have different angles to come at that, but I think it's very true that we tend... The things that we've never faced and allowed to be healed and released tend to set up patterns of repetition. One way I think of that is the repetition is a new invitation to healing and releasing on something.
Mm-hmm.
There's a great quote, I'm forgetting who the source was, that holding on to resentment is like taking a little poison every day and waiting for the other person to die.
Yeah.
And I think we do this to ourselves in all sorts of ways. But I know for myself, as I look at areas, even this in the past year, some areas of forgiveness that I didn't know I needed to finish, they really left me freer in a number of ways in my life and sort of how in my ability to assess things more accurately. So I think everybody deserves to forgive.
Okay. Well, I want to continue our conversation about this time of year and discouragement and the answer to it. And our conversation has kind of taken us down the road of forgiving and releasing and being vulnerable, with keeping open the idea that we do need to see, if it's serious discouragement and depression, you need to see a doctor and get an assessment. There may be a natural explanation for this that the doctor can help, but you also need to be open to going deeper than that, and that is what you're saying, Paul. You're looking at this from a spiritual perspective, too. Your discouragement right now in your life might not have anything to do with January. It might have everything to do with January 20 years ago, but not the January of today. So when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with Father Tollefson and Paul Ruff, and we're going to talk about confession.
What do you do in the confessional? You're listening to the Rediscover Hour.
The family of Washburn McCreevy Funeral Chapels and Cremation Services has proudly served the Twin Cities area for five generations. No matter which of the 16 locations you choose, you will always find an exceptional level of professionalism and care to a tribute of life. Washburn McCreevy's traditional approach to these tributes will allow survivors to love, laugh, and live well again, even after their loss. Pre-planning your funeral should be a natural part of life because it provides you with the time to make end-of-life decisions in a calm and rational atmosphere. You live your life to the fullest, knowing your wishes will be honored. Washburn McCreevy even has a pre-planning checklist or online form so that you can start the process with the ultimate privacy. Have one sent to you free by calling 612-377-7841. The family of Washburn McCreevy Funeral Chapels, Cemeteries, and Cremation Services continues to present the Daily Mass evenings on Relevant Radio. 612-377-7841.
Welcome back to the Rediscover Hour. Jeff Cavins with you, joined by Paul Ruff and Father Rolf Tollison from St. Hubert's in Chanhassen. Glad you could join us today. We're in the middle of a great conversation. If you missed the first part of it, go to our website at archspm.org and look up the Rediscover Hour, and Relevant Radio has it too. But go back and listen. If you know of somebody who's really struggling with discouragement this time of the year and needs to hear two professionals, Father Rolf and Paul, talk about what to do. What could it be? How do you handle this? Knowing we're not going to solve all the problems on the show here, but you know what? We can get you going in the right direction. Tell them about it. And our conversation has led us to forgiveness when it comes to really being hurt. And that hurt has led to discouragement and even despair in some people's lives because that has taken root. It has not been uprooted. It has been fed by a lot of other things in life. And you have a picture of yourself that is very destructive. You know what? God has a future for you that is a good future, and God has plans for you that are fruitful. And if you're struggling, your greatest advocate is Jesus Christ, who died to give you life and to give you life more abundantly. Father and Paul, let's continue on with our conversation about forgiveness.
Okay, you know, one thing that you had mentioned that we were talking about at break, Jeff, was the how we replay things that we haven't forgiven. And I think the place I see that happen most intensely and powerfully is in marital relationships. We often come to marriage, all of us do, with whatever injuries we have, often somewhat unconscious, and we've assigned our spouse to be the healer of these. Mm. You're going to be the person who now will give me all the things that I didn't get when I was younger. And we do this quite unconsciously, and I think we really put our spouse and ourselves in a bind with that. And part of the work in couples therapy is to become conscious of those unconscious assignments we've given each other and learn to set up a real attachment that can result in real healing in the present moment. That's not an unconscious replaying of things. I know, Father Rolf, you've got an exciting program coming up.
Yes, that's right. January 16th and 17th, we have a conference with Dr. Bob Shooks. He's a dear friend from down in Florida. He's got his doctorate in family systems therapy, but he mostly does a lot of healing prayer. And the healing prayer is utterly essential for those individuals that are struggling, those couples that are struggling in a marriage. The conference will cover some of those things as well, like how there can be reconciliation, how Jesus can be perceived by the individuals and see the couple in a different way through Jesus' eyes and not their own. But it's also a conference meant as a marriage enrichment opportunity as well, to be able to learn more about how to prevent any problems from happening in the future.
Very good. That sounds like an exciting one. And that's at St. Hubert's?
At St. Hubert's, January 16th and 17th. And To register, you'd go to the John Paul II Healing Center in Tallahassee.
Okay, online.
Online,
and to register for the event. Let's go into the confessional for a moment, Father. And we're talking about releasing, and we're talking about forgiveness. Paul did a great job of talking to us about this from a clinical psychologist view. What about as a priest in the sacrament of reconciliation?
Well, it can be a very powerful way for the person to be able to own the fact that they have done something wrong, for Jesus to speak a specific word to them in that. And I think some people find, as we had talked about with discouragement, they find themselves discouraged because they keep not wanting to let go of the power that they have over someone else in unforgiveness. So I encourage them to give Jesus permission to open up the door just a little bit so that they would be able to surrender that power and allow Jesus to come in. But they lose hope in that. They get discouraged because they keep running into the same situation at home with their family or whatever over and over again. And what I do in that situation, I might give them two different penances. If they're dealing with kind of an unforgiveness, and especially if I hear a tinge of despair, which is different than depression. You know, despair mm-hmm. is an actual act of the will saying, I don't think God's going to come through in his promises. So if hope is something that might be something they want to receive in their life, I have them pray the second glorious mystery of the rosary, the ascension of the Lord. That's the traditional mystery of hope because, you know, here's Jesus has risen from the dead. He's ascended into heaven. And the disciples are like, where'd he go? You know, so now it's like, and the Holy Spirit hasn't come. So we're in this middle time between Christ being physically seeing him and then his coming again in glory, and even before the Holy Spirit comes. That's a time of hope. Mm-hmm. So I'll give that mystery of the rosary, or I'll have them pray on key times in their life in which they felt loved, either by a spouse or by somebody else or by God, because those key times in their life, Pope Benedict talks about the connection between memory and hope. There needs to be a memory that's attached to God's faithfulness, that God proves his track record of faithfulness, and that helps someone grow in hope.
Okay, so I go to confession. I confess this anger that I have. I want to see the person as a human being, and I want a new narrative with this person. And I leave confession, and I'm thinking, wow, this is great. I'm so glad I got to go to confession and unburden my heart, and I feel like I'm doing well now. And then a week goes by, and all of a sudden something happens, and you're starting to feel that way again, and you're saying to yourself, maybe I didn't really release, or maybe I didn't make a good confession. And you go back and say, Father, I'm back here again. Or Paul, I'm back in the office mm-hmm. again, and I thought this was going to work, but it seems like there's something wrong with me.
I really appreciate the mention of hope. And I think it's important for us to have an understanding of sort of how they can operate for us. Sometimes we can be wishful, even coming out of confession or a counseling session. Or I've had a particularly good session with somebody and think, wow, we've really made a huge change, and they come back next week pretty much the same. That's true of all of us. We change very slowly. Mm-hmm. And I think to be aware of how do I hopefully, with hope, cooperate with the slow workings of nature in terms of my own brain making some changes, and we haven't talked about sort of the sort of new neuroscience of change as well, but also the slow process of working with God's will in our lives, but being able to be hopeful and attuned to the glimmers. And I like that word, little glimmers of progress. Often we look for evidence that all the things have changed, or we gather data to prove our old case of how rotten things are.
Mm-hmm.
I think to really stay focused in what are the real glimmers that God is working here, that I am healing, that my body's healing, and to cooperate with those glimmers, I think can really give us a way to stand hopefully as we work with the gradual process of what real change looks like.
So healing is a process that we're going to go through.
Right.
Father, you don't have a magic wand, and Paul, you don't have a magic wand. It's a process, right?
I think it's a process, and it's just that sometimes that unforgiveness, if it's still there toward a specific person, it may be, not necessarily always, but may be an echo of a deeper wound that has not been healed yet. And that's where especially healing prayer can be very helpful to help someone, for Jesus to show them as an 8-year-old what Jesus wants the 8-year-old to know. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, that which is received in the mode of the receiver, as the scholastic theologians taught us. So if the little boy needs to be have Jesus put his hand around or his arm around his shoulder, that's what the little boy needs to hear. And so I think that that's one thing. Another thing is to be able to keep going back and back again to a time, to that time of healing. I think consolation is invitation to virtue. A consolation and grace that God gives us is an invitation for us to pray with it over and over again. That's why Ignatius talks about repetition in prayer, because then the consolation becomes our normal way.
And that's almost related to the neuroscience that's going on now about the synapses in the brains, and you continue to do a virtuous thing, which is a repeated good.
That's right. That we used to kind of have this idea that we were, you know, the mold was set by the time we were 3 in psychology. Mm-hmm. And really, we see there's this neuroplasticity. We're capable of change at any age, at any time, but it's a slow process.
Yeah, yeah.
And it works best in relationship with another person who can really help us, whether it's our physician again, our priest, our therapist, be an agent of that change.
Well, I want to conclude the show, because we only have less than a minute or so left, with we've been talking about a lot of issues. But the good news is, both of you have seen people succeed. Both of you have seen people who have become free and have lived wonderful lives. And so I'd like to end the show on that and thank both of you for spending an hour with us. Father Rolf Tollefson from St. Hubert's and Paul Ruff, licensed psychologist here in the Twin Cities. Once again, I want to remind our listeners, you're not opening up the door right now for all the business, that you are very gracious to come here today. And I want to encourage you, as you are driving around or whatever you might be doing, that life can change. And Jesus and His grace are here, His family, and you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, and you can reach that point. So I hope that the show has been a great encouragement to you. And thank you so much for joining us today on the Rediscover Hour. God bless.
The Rediscover Hour is heard every Friday morning at 9, Saturday evening at 6, and Sunday morning at 9 on Relevant Radio 1330. You can find show audio archives at rediscover-faith.org and at relevantradio.com. Keyword, rediscover. The Rediscover Hour is a production of the Archdiocese of St. Paul in Minneapolis in cooperation with Relevant Radio. Rediscover.